So here's the thing with homemade meals. Eating them is great, but all the chopping and measuring and cleanup, not so much. With new one-pan assemble and bake meals from Blue Apron, you get all the flavor of homemade meals with a fraction of the work. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients, bake in the oven, and enjoy. Shop Assemble and Bake at BlueApron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit BlueApron.com/terms for more.
So that turned out to be false. The Ravens entered a season where they expected to be a Super Bowl team, though the coach at the time didn't want to hear about Super Bowl or bust. Alas, they were a colossal disappointment, and they're not even in the playoffs. They fired John Harbaugh. By the way, press conference on Tuesday, Steve Bisciotti speaking to the media for the first time since February of 2018. That's except for the one time he spoke to four guys. But he'll be speaking in the auditorium for the first time since the end of the 2017 season. Alas, a lot of work for Eric DaCosta this offseason. Is he up for it?
I mean, he better be. I mean, every time you play that clip, it's just like the brazen audacity of these people. It really, did that sound like a guy who was trying to get better at every spot on the roster? Did that sound like a guy who was content? Hey, the media is saying we've got the best roster in the world, so I'm going to go watch safeties because we're just a safety away. And that's how they treated their offseason. And they were the biggest disappointment in the NFL. I think a lot has to change about their front office that goes well beyond firing a coach and hiring a new coach and new coordinators and all that. They need to rethink what their overarching philosophies are. What they feel like are the core tenets of roster construction. I mean, if I'm Steve Bisciotti, I want to interview Eric DaCosta as much as I want to interview all these potential head coaches. Like, so how are you getting out of this? Give me your top six positions in general. What do you think the six most important positions are in football? Why are they the six most important positions for the way we want to play defense? How do you think you've gone about addressing that? Do we need to rearrange that list? I think they need to be challenged at every measure and frankly challenged by people who aren't in this building right now. I doubt that's going to happen. I severely do. I would love for Bisciotti to surprise me that way and also bring, you know, go about, ends up, we find out he's bringing Marty Herney in or somebody like that to be special assistant to the owner who's going to be in the building a couple days a week and can keep tabs on you know, what these guys are doing or not doing. I think they need to overhaul their scouting and some scouting philosophies. I think they absolutely need to overhaul their analytics department. I mean, those conversations, I mean, I get it. Right now, the priority is coaching staff, but it's an 8-month off season. It's a lot of time between now and the draft, decent amount of time between now and free agency. They need to be thinking in those regards. If the overarching things we glean from these people who are going to be on that dais on Tuesday is that it was coaching holding them back. If that's the inference, and there isn't,
it better not.
And
be.
There isn't. Well, I mean, if there isn't a real sense of contrition and I would say heartbreak over the role that player evaluations and roster construction have gone into this thing crumbling and becoming the mess that it is, then doesn't matter who this coach is, he's going to be up against it.
Eric DaCosta played a significant role in why this organization is where it's at over the past 12-plus months. And when we had Kyle Goon on, who columnist for the Baltimore Banner, he was talking, and I kept thinking parallels between Mike Elias and Eric DaCosta.
Absolutely.
And they're in a similar situation where it's not the same, and I understand it's different sports and different financials and all of that. But in terms of Mike fired Brendan Hyde, and now John Harbaugh is gone. And when we see this happen in sports, when you fire the coach, when you fire the manager, well, the GM's on notice. The GM is officially on the hot seat. And I think we were all very interested in seeing how Mike Elias was going to operate this offseason after a colossal failure that was the 2025 Orioles. Well, now, conversely, I'm really interested in seeing how Eric DaCosta is going to operate this offseason, because I think there has to be a significant shift in roster building philosophy. And look at the spending. Eric DaCosta came or was promoted to GM of the Ravens in 2019. Spending for Edge in each of those years: 31st in 2019, 13th in 2020. That was when Matt Judon was on the tag. 30th in 2021, 23rd in 2022, 26th in 2023, 29th in 2024, and this year they were 30th. There has to be a reconfiguration there. They were last in offensive line spending this year. Next year, I understand it's very early projections, they're 31st in O-line spending. They're dead last in edge spending. But they're first in spending at linebacker and seventh in linebacker this past year, seventh in safety. Corner, this year they were outside of the top 10 after they traded Jair Alexander. That was the first season they were outside of top 10 in spending at corner since 2017. There has to be a reconfiguration in the roster building. There has to be a reconfiguration in how you approach the offseason in terms of free agency. Hey, you're going to get the max of comp picks this upcoming offseason. You got the four. Do you need to get all four every single year? Can you go out and spend some money and have some splurges here and there? Can you trade up in the draft? You're drafting the highest you've drafted since Kyle Hamilton. If someone's slipping in the top 10, do you break mold? Do you break mold in maybe trying to go get a Max Crosby? I want to see Eric DaCosta in how he's going to operate differently this offseason, because the pressure's on.
Couple of things. Number one, I do wonder if they'll adjust with the comp thing, because I think there's going to be less and less draftable players in each draft, because the mid-round guys might just stay in school to make the sure money than come in and be it. Like, I think we saw it a little bit last year. Like, there's going to be less draftable players, so the value in those rounds that these comp picks are getting you is not what it used to be. Also, you brought up Mike Elias, and we've talked about this before. When I hear Eric say that, it reminds me of the way the Orioles did business. Like, everything's going to be best case scenario, so we don't have to do anything to worry about anything, because Kyle Van Noy is going to do what he did a year ago, and this guy's going to do what a year
that's
ago.
That's a symptom of a deeper problem. Why?
It's complacency.
Well, it's complacency, and it's also you truly think you're smarter than everybody else. That there is an inherent arrogance. It is the idea that our way is so much smarter, and our quants and our computers, which are built by them, and our models tell us we're so much smarter. Eventually, the baseball gods and the football gods and luck will come together to prove us out. Like, that's the part of it that drives me. And in the real world, you're not that good. In the real world, people are spending a lot of their what's left of their disposable income on your product. In the real world, Lamar Jackson gets 1 year closer to retirement every year that he plays. Like, that's the Gunnar Henderson gets 1 year closer to being a New York Yankee or a Chicago Cub or whatever. Every year that you piss away with your grand experiment, that really isn't about winning right now. It's about being smarter than everybody else, doing it your way. Oh, Howie Roseman wants to build the best D-line possible and keep going to the Super Bowl. That we'll show him. Nah, bro. You're not that smart. You're not that good. Your quants ain't that different than anybody else's. Your computer models aren't better than everybody else's. And now you're looking for a coach. And guess what? A year from now, you might be looking for a job.
It's funny you mentioned the quants and the analytics and all that. There was a time when the Ravens were ahead of everybody else on that stuff, and there were teams that weren't doing it. Now there are very few teams that aren't doing it. So they don't have the edge that say, Ozzie Newsome had 20 years ago. That doesn't exist.
A lot about this franchise doesn't feel like it did 20 years ago. You could do 4 hours on that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they're looking for a new head coach. They did interview Vance Joseph, and I'm not telling you Vance Joseph is getting this job, but I think they should interview as many people as possible, hear from as many voices as possible before you make your hire. So just don't get all excited about Vance Joseph getting the first interview. We have a busy show here on this Thursday.
Well, also, real quick, too, there are logistics and rules. I know we haven't had a coaching search around here forever.
Yeah.
Guys who have been eliminated, guys who are out of the league, guys with less experience who are out of the league are always there's a pecking order to this. Wise man once told me, who's placed a lot of smart head coaches, including Andy Reid multiple times. The first guy or the last guy? And if it's an established guy, the last guy is often the one who gets the job, if you're even aware of that chronology. But again, people I'd love them to talk to, many of them, like the Jacksonville Jaguars D coordinator, you can't talk to them yet.
No. I have a something hit me today with the Mike McDaniel firing. Jason, what about Saleh as the head coach with McDaniel as his OC?
I don't want anything to do with Robert Saleh. I don't think he's a head coach. I don't think he's particularly I don't think he's this defensive mastermind that people make him out to be. He don't pass my sniff test. Just go watch Hard Knocks. You tell me if you think he don't pass my sniff test.
Well, real quick with the McDaniel firing, could that signal Harb's to Miami?
They're not doing that if John Harbaugh's still employed. Now, if Mike Tomlin is like, it would take something like this. Andy Reid retiring, Mike Tomlin getting fired, John Harbaugh getting fired. They let this guy talk to the media a few days ago. Like they let the whole industry know. Yeah. Come, we're gonna pay you a lot of money to get Tua off our hands, and we're gonna keep this Jamoke around for another year, even though, we probably should have fired him in November.
Guest-wise on today's show, Benjamin Solak, I caught a lot of attention in this area. He was on a podcast talking about the Ravens roster construction. Obviously, we'll talk about the firing of John Harbaugh, but also the Ravens roster with him at 2:30. We'll talk Ravens NFL with Odyssey NFL insider Brian Baldinger. He joins us at 3. Morgan Atts at Fox 45 Sports. Get her thoughts on the Harbaugh firing and what's next at 3:30. And Lucy Burge, best bets and nonsense from DraftKings at 4.
I wonder what Lucy Burge thinks about Bill and Jordan coming to Baltimore.
Stop.
I don't want any part of it. I can't imagine they would do that.
Nah.
That would be something.
No shot.
No.
That would be something.
Coming up next, though, it's time for some necessary roughness. This offense has some issues. How many? We're going to tell you next here.
So here's the thing with homemade meals. Eating them is great, but all the chopping and measuring and cleanup, not so much. With new one-pan assemble and bake meals from Blue Apron, you get all the flavor of homemade meals with a fraction of the work. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients, bake in the oven, and enjoy. Shop Assemble and Bake at BlueApron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit BlueApron.com/terms for more.
A fan. Ravens offseason has already begun as they missed the playoffs after losing to Pittsburgh on Sunday night. And now we start looking at needs, at the roster construction, et cetera. And let's take a look at the offense, guys. And I was thinking about this morning. Like, other than their MVP quarterback and their 32-year-old running back, what the heck? Like, what position group do you feel good about on the offensive side of the football? Like, the tight end room used to be the best in football. Now all you got is Mark Andrews, who looks a little cooked. I love Zay Flowers, but that's all you got at wide receiver. And the O-line stinks.
I think you have major issues. I don't see how you bring Rashad Bateman back. I mean, we can sit here right now. All right. And so it's Eric's mess. It's Eric and Steve's mess. Harbaugh's out of the building. I don't want to hear whoever the coach is, whether he's experienced or not experienced. It's all going to be new to him. Mm. This is their rodeo. So it's their mess. They got a lot to clean up. Like, if we see things like running it back with Bateman, which, I have no reason to think anything's going to change in how they operate as a front office, because I just watch them rub Andrew's contract in Likely's face with the season on the line. So I don't think, I mean, that just happened.
Yeah.
So nothing, Harbaugh's firing doesn't have anything to do with that one way or the other. He didn't have a hand in that one way or the other. That's completely out of his purview. And it just happened. But like, if they're not willing to realize they got one good year out of Bateman and should have sold high on him and just get him out low, then that's going to be a further indictment that they still think they're the smartest people in the league and that they're not willing to admit defeat and move on and take a dose of you're gonna have to, that's going to taste like a spoonful of pepper when you extended him one more time than you had to, and now you're going to get nothing for him. And he's probably going to go somewhere else and be on his best behavior for a year and look pretty good. But it's not going to happen here. So there's got to be self-scouting recognitions of, like, even some of the names that might appear on a depth chart right now can't be back or shouldn't be back. If you don't bring someone in with some degree of proven left tackle production, whether it's at a very high level in college or whether it's very recently in the NFL, you're asking for your offensive line to collapse again next year. So that's one where maybe some people would be like, well, I don't know that left tackle would be a premium need. For me, it's a top five need. The problem is I don't even know where to rank them because there's like 12 of them. There's like 12 needs that are all pretty important. And left tackle, obviously, is any team builder would tell you it's one of the five most important positions. So like even where, again, yeah, you could look at that wide receiver room, you could look at the tackles as their own subsect of the O-line and say, well, they're okay at tackle. I don't think they're okay at tackle. If they took a quarterback high, that would be baffling. Mm-hmm. If they took a running back high, given all the needs they have, even if they didn't have Derrick Henry, I don't care if it was Barkley, whoever you think it might be, even a Bijan. No. How much is Atlanta won with Bijan with all their other issues?
Yeah.
No. So outside of that, you can make the case for anything. I'll say this. You're not winning in this league unless you have size speed merchants who can win for you on the outside, even when it's not a perfect pass and even when it's a 35-65 ball or a 45-50. You better have at least one of those guys in your roster, either at tight end or wide receiver, whatever you want to call them, and you better have at least one of them on the other side of the ball who can stop that stuff. And they have none of the above.
I know we're getting to defense later in the hour, but for both sides, I'm focusing in the trenches because those are the areas in which Eric DaCosta significantly neglected the 2025 Ravens. And with this offensive line, Ronnie, with how the contract, he's coming back, but I'm with you, Jason. You better bring in legit.
Don't give me a journeyman guard who can't play tackle and tell me that's your swing.
Yeah.
You know, Falele, he's a free agent, he's gone. Linderbaum, he's a free agent. What happens there? Rosengarten, he's coming off a sophomore slump. So you're going to have to significantly invest in this offensive line. And you were dead last in spending there last year. Right now you're projected at 31st in spending this upcoming year. What we've seen, and you can go back to 2021 as a perfect example, probably when the offensive line was as bad as it was this past year. Like any quarterback, it significantly affected Lamar Jackson.
Sure.
There were times where it was really in his head, and he got gun shy and maybe felt the pressure coming when it wasn't coming and stepping up when he did. Like, it significantly affected Lamar Jackson. So, priority one, and trust me, receiver, tight end, like that, there's plenty of needs, like you outlined, Jason. But priority one, you can't neglect the offensive line again. You can't.
Well, you want to see how bad the line was. The signature Lamar Jackson play in that Steelers game was due to a complete and outright failure of the offensive line. Two guys came in clean, and he somehow got between both of them and threw a BB to Zay Flowers for a touchdown. You didn't mention Voorhees because I know he's still under contract, but he shouldn't be guaranteed a role. They have major issues. Like, Rosengarten regressed. Ronnie's okay, but you trust him to be healthy? Like, there's issues at every spot on this whole line.
Yeah. And we don't know who the next O-line coach is going to be or what his pedigree is going to be and all of that. Look, the reality with Lamar Jackson is the older he gets, he's going to cost more because of what he's done and because, frankly, they negotiated contracts that put themselves behind the eight ball at 2026. Did he want to get ahead of it in 2025? No, he told you, I don't need to do this offseason. Have you seen our roster? I'll get back to me next year. Well, we're here, bro. So that compounds the problem. And then what else is going to happen the older he gets? He's going to run less. You got to have a real offensive line. You can't get by with 1.5 offensive linemen who are any good. One guy who could play in the league on most teams, and then a bunch of experiments. Like, it's not. And then when he gets banged up in season, in part because your O-line ain't nearly as good as it needs to be, or you thought it was going to be, then it starts to happen even quicker in real time. So, but it's a hell of a time to need all that. When you also got one guy who can really win for him downfield, and that guy is small, and that guy doesn't win on the outside.
And
he's
the
great. I love him. Pay him. He's a great player. He fits with the quarterback. They see the game the same way. He's great on scramble drills. You go into the playoffs, but teams only need to take away Lil Zay Flowers. You're not winning in the playoffs.
And the only other guy we've ever seen do any winning is leaving. He won on fourth down in Pittsburgh Sunday night. That's Isaiah Likely. He won in the playoff game in Buffalo. He's not coming back. They gave the money to Mark Andrews. So, like, you've got one dude and he's small.
Yeah, I mean, if they're interviewing me for this job, I would have questions. Like, I'd have more questions for them than they'd have for me. Yeah.
Do you think it's the best job?
It's the best job because these other organizations are doing this every 3 years.
Yeah, the other ones are.
I mean,
and you have Lamar Jackson.
You got Lamar Jackson. You got great facilities. Dirty little secret: the division sucks. So it's not like, oh, I don't know about going to that division. Like,
yeah.
I mean, it's the best. It's the best job by far. But that doesn't mean that they're anywhere close to being a Super Bowl contender.
Coming up next, we'll get into the roster. We'll get into the Ravens' future at head coach, Benjamin Solak. He covers the NFL for ESPN. He joins us next here.
So here's the thing with homemade meals. Eating them is great, but all the chopping and measuring and cleanup, not so much. With new one-pan assemble and bake meals from Blue Apron, you get all the flavor of homemade meals with a fraction of the work. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients, bake in the oven, and enjoy. Shop, assemble, and bake at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
I'm a fan. Ben Solak is an NFL analyst at ESPN. He was part of a podcast recently talking about the Ravens roster construction, and we wanted to talk to him about that. But, of course, since we asked him to come on, the Ravens have fired their head coach. They're looking for a head coach. Now as John Harbaugh is free to look elsewhere. So let's bring in Ben Solak from ESPN now. And Ben, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it. So let's start with the John Harbaugh firing, just your reaction to that, and where do you think they go from here?
Yeah, I was surprised. I heard the noise like everybody else, you know, the storm clouds on the horizon like everybody else. But you don't often see these things actually come to a head and end up with a split, especially for a coach who has been over his career as successful and who is, you know, in the NFL so nicely regarded as Harbaugh is. Now, I think as the days fall by and the weeks go by, we're going to hear more and more about some of the fractured relationships there in the locker room, and this is going to make more sense. But I was surprised. Now, there's a lot of different paths you can go. When you move on from a coach like Harbaugh, it's obviously really big shoes to fill, but you also have a two-time MVP at quarterback, and it is extremely rare in the NFL that a job opens up with this much quarterback security and this much quarterback talent as it's currently open in Baltimore. And so it's going to be the top job on a lot of guys' lists. They're going to do, I hope, a pretty wide search, bring about some different philosophies, some new thoughts, and then they'll make a decision from there. And so which way they go, I could hardly tell you, but here they are.
Well, who would you like to see them get, Ben?
I do find myself right now wanting Brian Flores more than anybody mm-hmm. else. I think Flores has deserved a job for the last like 2 years at this point. I know the first and obvious knock against him is how poorly things ended in Miami, how he lost the locker room, some of the fractured relationships. But one, I think that a lot more of that information has gotten out because of the nature of how he left. He's got the lawsuit against the NFL. Stephen Ross kind of burned those bridges. I think NFL fans would be surprised how many other guys have had that impression on their staffs and on their locker rooms before and then have learned how to do a better job. And so if we sit here from the outside and say, I've heard all these things about how Brian Flores was so nasty to Tua and he was so tough to work with, I would say more NFL coaches than you realize have that sort of a reputation and yet continue to find jobs in winning ways. And so there's that aspect to it. I think Flores has grown from that interpersonal aspect of the job. And then there's the scheme aspect of it, which is like, I don't need to tell Ravens fans about that game that Lamar played against Miami back in the day, right? I mean, like, this guy has a special ability to create defensive stops out of insufficient talent and especially against elite offenses and elite quarterbacks, right? Like, he is a system unto himself, a success unto himself on the defensive side of the ball. And with Lamar on the offensive side of the ball, you kind of already have a system to yourself in terms of design running game and what he can do. And so Flores and Lamar together, to me, is a team that can quite quickly become a Super Bowl contender.
So Flores, of the guys currently in the league who've been a head coach before, he would be number two on my list. But because of the Belichick factor, right, that coaching family tree, the way it hasn't worked, guys say, I'm going to change. I learned from being a tyrant the first time. Then, you know, McDaniels didn't and Patricia didn't. I prefer Steve Spagnuolo. What do you think about that? They had Harbs was going to be 63, so 63, 65 or whatever, not a big difference. He's got special sauce. He's shut Lamar down. He's got he's been practicing against Andy Reid forever, so he knows that. He's Andy Reid family tree. Harbs was Andy Reid family tree. Coached in Philadelphia, coached in New York, understands cold weather, could fit in this division. What do you think of that?
I think it's a great hire. I think that Spags has been a guy who I would have liked to have seen on the head coaching interview list and getting a job over the last couple of years. Spags gets the defensive coach discount, right? People mm-hmm. tend to like to hire offensive coaches over defensive coaches. And he also gets the old guy discount. If you're going to hire a defensive coach, people like these young up-and-comers. They like the Mike McDonalds and the Brian Floreses of the world, right? These young and innovators who are doing new things. But I agree with you that I think Spags, culture-wise, would be extremely good. He's been around a lot of winning teams in a lot of different environments before. And I do think defensively, schematically, he's one of the top guys that you have. Whenever you have a guy like that in Spags who has been so successful as a defensive coordinator, and this is also true of Flores to a degree, you do wonder the degree to which, all right, how are they going to take on the additional head coaching responsibilities? Are they going to call their defense, so on and so forth? Because defense does require a little bit more in terms of like week over week game planning yeah. and adjusting what you're doing to your opponent, such that it starts to fill the calendar Monday to Saturday when you're planning week over week in the NFL season. So that is the, like, I think that's a legitimate challenge for some of these defensive guys. You would want to ask Spags, why the defense has been so good when you're coordinating and not as good when you're the head coach, right? Jim Schwartz in Cleveland, another guy you can talk yeah. to about this. And so there's that concern, but in general, I think Spags is a great hire, would be a good guy to bring in and talk to.
Talking with Ben Solak, it's Inside Access here on the Fan. Ben, let's go to the roster that the Ravens currently have. And all offseason, we had heard that this was the best roster in the NFL. And when we get to the actual football games, and at the end of the season, it looks far from the best roster in the NFL. And there, we were just talking about the fact there's a lot of concerns on both sides of the ball. What do you think of the roster construction?
Yeah, it's tricky because from an umbrella view, you should try to build your team the way the Ravens have tried to build their team. You should try to draft and develop. You should get, you know, a fourth-round pick in Isaiah Likely and find a role for that guy. You should bring, you know, your guards along, your Andrew Voorhees and your Daniel Falele. It's like, this is Roger Rosengarten, second round. Oh, you know, Teddy Buchanan, fourth round. This is how you should do it. This is how you should try to do it. Unfortunately, drafting is really hard. And even when you draft right, development is then really hard. And you've experienced, I think, a little bit more missing from Eric DaCosta than we saw, you know, at the end of the Ozzie Newsome era into the beginning of the DaCosta era. And then I think you've seen a real halt in development, right? And I think that's where you could talk to maybe some of the coaching issues, defensive side of the ball, how much does it fall on Harbaugh? But in general, you're getting guys into the building, Odafe Owe, Nate Wiggins, A. Flowers, Isaiah Likely, who walk in, they produce. There's clearly something there, but it doesn't feel like they're taking big leaps, right? And from year two to year three, year one to year two, look at this dramatic improvement in these players. And accordingly, when you have a roster's got some star talent on it, you have a Lamar Jackson, you have a Kyle Hamilton, you have a Nnamdi Madubuike before he was injured, right? And you say, okay, these are our stars. Now for our second tier and our third tier, we need young players to step up into these roles and to fill these jobs, you know, for pennies on the dollar while we're giving these big contracts out to Lamar and so on and so forth. You just didn't see that in Baltimore. Just after the star talent, the roster falls off really precipitously. And there's two ways to go about it. The first way is draft and develop, right? Get a little bit better, get a little bit luckier with your picks. But the second way is being more aggressive in free agency. And you would really hope that the Ravens, seeing what they have here in Lamar Jackson, understanding that this is an elite NFL quarterback, two-time MVP, but he's turning 29. He relies a lot on his legs. Like, we're not going to have another 10, 15 years of this. He's not going to be like a Tom Brady, Peyton Manning sort of a guy as he ages. Let's be aggressive now. You would hope that they spend more money in veteran free agency. Yeah. You hope that they bring in guys who can immediately plug and play some of those holes for them. I'm not sure they will, but that would be my approach.
Ben, I'm with you 100%. And I also think there has to be, the pendulum has to swing back the other way. I've said this for a while. They invest so much into their secondary, more than any other team in football when you look at the cornerback position, safety position, draft capital, cash. But the edge position has just been neglected for years. They haven't paid anybody since Terrell Suggs walked out the door. How much change in how they view that position needs to take place?
Some, for sure. I do think that when you had the Mike McDonald moment there in Baltimore, one of the things about McDonald that was so incredible was the ability to fit the run out of too high, the ability to manufacture pressure without elite edge presence, right? Which, when you have a dude who can allow you to cheese a position like that, he becomes extremely valuable, right? Like, let's talk about the Shanahan offensive guys. Mm-hmm. What do? They get you elite offense without elite quarterback play. Just the ability to cheese that one spot provides so much roster value you can then put into other positions, right? And so McDonald gave them, I think, a little bit of license defensively, system-wise, to have an elite defensive unit by investing more in the secondary and being able to save money at the defensive line position. Now, he gets out of the building. You have a bunch of guys on the defensive staff. You choose to promote Zach Orr. Anthony Weaver gets out of the building, right? Denard Wilson gets out of the building. And all of a sudden, just kind of the defensive coaching well dries up a little bit, and you don't have that same import. And now that edge play really starts to matter. You start to feel that. In the NFL, just like a fundamental truth is that you can run whatever scheme you want. You can be designed however you like. If you can't win in the trenches, you lose in January. You just do, right? And so even if you want to stay in that defensive philosophy, and even if you believe in a pass-first league, living in too high and winning from the back to the front, I think that is good, sound philosophy. I wouldn't mind if they stayed believing in that. But you still have to invest more in the defensive line. You do, because just the simple truth of football is that if you lose in the trenches, you lose in January. That's how it goes.
I feel like you also need to be big, and you need to be strong and healthy. And they seem to be so inclined to lean into a smaller guy. There's value there. You know, there's a hurt guy. There's value there. We can wait. Even in this last draft, it's a generational draft potentially. Evaluators who know their stuff have been telling me for years, that's the draft to take a D lineman. There's a big starting D lineman in every round. They wait till the end and take a little D lineman who maybe can't play in the league. He definitely ain't starting anywhere. Like, I feel like that part of their philosophy is also flawed. You're Super Bowl or bust. Your quarterback's going to be 30. A redshirt Ajabo, you know what I mean? Bateman comes in with a foot issue. He's a medical reject for some teams. Let's take him in the first round. Our doctors are better than theirs. I feel like that there's something askew with them looking for value where, to me, they need blue chip.
Yeah, now what's tricky is you let the pendulum swing to the other side. You be as big of a defense as possible, be as physical of a defense as possible, so that way you stay healthier. That's how you become the Detroit Lions. And they've been super hurt over the last couple of years, right? Because they play such a physical style of football. And also because a lot of injury is luck, right? A lot of injury, it just is the way that these chips fall. And so it's always, you want to settle the pendulum somewhere around an equilibrium. You never want to swing too far in the other direction. I do think that, like, for the way that they want to play with the lighter boxes, they have some guys who are some hitters, right? Like, if you think about the way that Malachi Starks and Darius Washington have played that position for the last couple of years, beyond even just Kyle, if you look at the linebacker play and what you've got there in Teddy Buchanan, I think they know that, okay, if we're going to be a smaller group, we're going to need to have good tacklers in the second level. The one spot where I think they got to be more serious about the size is that edge spot, right? Where when you go Odafe Owe into Adisa Isaac, into David Ojabo, into Mike Green, okay, I get it. You want pass rush presence. Everyone's pass rush presence. These guys get moved off the ball in the running game. Right? And you've seen that been an issue in the AFC playoffs for a while now.
Ben Solak's an NFL analyst at ESPN. Ben, this was great. Thank you so much for your time, man.
Appreciate you guys. Y'all take care now.
Yep. Coming up next, we talked about the issues on the offensive side of the ball. But coming up next, what about on the defensive side of the ball? What is there to like on defense? We'll tell you next here on The Fan. So we talked earlier about the offense and a lot of issues there, but at least they have a two-time MVP quarterback and an ageless running back. On the defensive side of the ball, if we assume that Nnamdi Madubuike ain't playing football again, you've got Kyle Hamilton. And I love Kyle Hamilton. I may be higher on Kyle Hamilton than others, but he can't mask their other issues like Lamar can mask the offensive line issues. If all you got's Kyle Hamilton, you got real problems on the defensive side as far as real dudes.
I think the defense is in even worse shape than the offense.
I think Travis Jones is a player.
But he's not a blue-chip guy. He's a nice player. He's a nice player.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you got his deal done and Nnamdi Madubuike was going to play
14
games,
yeah,
then I'd be like, yeah, you still better be drafting some D-tackles, but... You know, that's day two, day three. You could make the case for any premium defensive position as being a guy they not only just take at 14, but a position they target to try to move up and get somebody specific. Anything really other than safety is there's no there. There's depth guys. There's role players. The D-line is... It's criminally bereft of talent. It's hard. It's hard to build a defensive line that short of lacking in any sort of individual game-breaking tendencies. I'm not even talking about a game-breaker. Like somebody who has the potential to maybe, like, no. And even Mike Green, no.
Haven't shown it yet.
I mean, you can't bank on it. Like, no. And as far as him being an every-down guy, nobody was saying that. It was like, well, if their defense is good and you just rush them on third down and somebody on the other side can rush too, which never happened, then he might lead your team in sacks and get you 8 to 10 sacks because he's just able to see ball, hunt ball. But like, their defense is so bad, it's stunting individual player development. Like, They don't have a boundary corner who, for me, is worth a damn. They don't have a middle linebacker, even though they're paying one like best of breed. They don't have D tackles. They sure as hell don't have edge. They don't even have a – who's the nickel corner who's any good? I mean, it should be Kyle, Marlon, but I mean, Marlon's 30, whatever. Marlon needs to go. Like, yeah, they go, oh, we'll keep him as a safety. Again. We'll keep him as a corner. Nah, no.
He needs to go.
No.
Well,
so,
well, Jason, and you say safety, they're fine. I can't even say that. They have Malachi Starks. That's it.
I think Malachi Starks would be a good player.
He is, but I'm saying outside of him.
But they can't draft another state.
Gilman's a free agent. Ardarius is a free agent. Like,
they'll be able to bring Ardarius back on cheap.
Sure. Yes, I agree. But I'm saying with how the roster is right now under contract, like that's it. You're going to need to get another safety because you already made that mistake last year.
But they must know now. They must know that if we keep building our defenses this way, you could have Ed Reed and Troy Polamalu as your safety package. They're not... The quarterback has that much time. People are wide-ass open. They're going to do nothing without a pass rush.
We're going to get more into this tomorrow, but the thing that really jumps off the screen when you look at their salary cap commitment, you're talking about nearly $60 million in cap space tied up between Marlon Humphrey and Roquan Smith. 60! Like, that is a glaring issue.
It's a joke.
And I thought Ben Solak made a great point that we haven't brought up enough on this show. Not only are the pass rushers not getting to the quarterback, but they're horrible against the run. They're like, their liabilities, they're smaller, so they're getting killed on the edge in run defense.
They got a bunch of situational guys. They got a bunch of sub-package guys, and they try to put them all together and tell you that nobody appreciates pass rush more than we do. I mean, I don't know, dude. Ozzie Newsome didn't build his defenses this way. You could hide behind Ozzie. Like, you could say you're an offshoot of Ozzie. These teams look nothing like Ozzie Newsome Ravens teams.
The first Super Bowl team had...
Goose and Sam Aniff.
Yeah, well, they had Peter Bulware. They had the old... I can't think of his name. The defensive end that came over
McCrary.
From...
McCrary.
McCrary from Seattle, but Michael the third McCrary. Guy, the Browns guy.
They got nobody
guy.
Who looks like Suggs.
No.
Like,
no,
they had teams
Rob
are...
Burnett.
Rob Burnett, yes. Yeah. And Jamie Sharper could get after it, too.
Like, this is... And I know the game has changed, whatever.
Oh, totally,
but
yeah,
like,
totally.
There's no there on defense. And it's funny, people saying Lamar should give back money. Roquan Smith should give back money. No, that guy.
Well,
anybody should be saying, hey, you paid me five times what I'm worth.
Well, we've had the conversation, you know, over the years, the EDC barbershop. Marlon Humphrey is set to make over $19 million in cash. $19 million in cash. He's not sniffing that on the open market. He's not sniffing it.
No, because he can't play anymore. Like the last time
there's the whole contract part of this, which is suck, too. They don't self-scout, and then they do stupid contracts. And when they put poison pills in contracts like Lamar, they sit on their ass for 6 months while the rest of the league does deals and then cost themselves money. Like... That's all part of roster construction and overarching philosophies that, again, had nothing to do with Harbs and will have nothing to do with the new. I don't care who they hire as the head coach. He's not solving that riddle for him.
Coming up next, we will talk Ravens and NFL. Playoffs are here. Ravens are not in it. But Brian Baldinger, he knows what's going on in the National Football League. We'll talk Ravens and the playoffs with him next here on The Fan.